And as Judeo-Christian beliefs have been eroded and displaced, they are now replaced by the latest religion on the rise, a type of religion that is the most dangerous type, the type I've been mentioning. I'm speaking of political religion. Welcome to EFM. EFM stands for Especially For Members. These are special episodes where I take a moment to talk about a lot of the concerns that I generally, these topics I generally discuss in my regular show episodes, but I do so in the context of my faith and my religion, and I'm able to speak much more openly using terminology and scriptures that may be more unique to my faith, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Without further ado, here is the episode. We are now at that part of the Come Follow Me program where we are in the war chapters of the Book of Mormon, that large chunk at the end of the Book of Alma, where there's just a lot of fighting going on. And I know many people have, wondered about it, but truly, those chapters are chapters I have loved a long, long time. Really, like, when you start reading them, you get sucked into this world where the Nephites and the Lamanites are fighting each other. But this fight is different. And what I mean is, it's not like the other battles, at least not quite like all the battles, which are in the Book of Mormon. And those battles, they tend to be more or less glossed over or have some other point of contention. But these war chapters in the Book of Alma, they depict a war that is similar to our day. And dare I say, it is familiar. You see, this war is much more than about the Nephites getting lazy or unrighteous. No, this war is about the core elements of a happy, righteous, and prosperous people. In Alma 48, it states that Captain Moroni, who was the leader of the armies of the Nephites, was, quote, preparing to support their liberty, their lands, their wives, and their children, and their peace, that they might live unto the Lord their God, that they might maintain that which was called by their enemies, the cause of Christians. These war chapters are about the long, complex struggle for the cause of Christians, as Captain Moroni puts it, or the cause of liberty, as Helaman calls it, the same Helaman who is leading the armies of Helaman, the stripling warriors. He calls it that in his letter to Moroni, in a verse where he describes those same elements. As you read these chapters, you can't help but feel that they really were God-inspired. I feel that way when I read them. They are trying to tell us something. They're trying to prepare us against things in our day where we would have to fight for those same elements in Moroni's statement earlier. In fact, those elements, those pieces that make up the cause of Christians, they are repeated throughout these war chapters in the Book of Mormon. So it's not just said once. I'm not just pulling this out of a one-time verse. You find them in Alma chapter 58, 48, 46, 44, and 43. And I'm sure you can find them more times, but those are the ones I was able to find more readily. You just can't ignore it. There is so much we can learn about our day and what to prepare against in these chapters, but let's just focus on right now the cause of Christians. Is it any surprise that those things, God, religion, family, peace, property, or how they call it land, and liberty, is it any surprise that those things are being awfully attacked, horribly attacked today? Let's take a look at each of these elements to better understand why they are so important and how they are attacked and manipulated against us today. Because if we don't recognize the awful situation that we're in, then we are going to lose so much more than we realize. So let's first talk about God as the first element. So God is one that we must defend, not because God needs our help, but because we need God and the sustaining and morally empowering authority that He provides. When we defend God, we are universally defending a man's right to autonomy of thought and agency. But how? Okay, well, mankind has always sought for the directing guidance and assurance that comes from a higher power or some form of a higher authority, a moral authority. Something or someone can steer us in our sense of right and wrong. And generally, people attribute that to be their God, that something or that someone. And for us, it is Heavenly Father. He is the ultimate moral authority, and he steers us in our sense of right and wrong. And we use this information to make decisions. This relationship between God and man is extremely personal. Now, imagine, however, if you live in a society where God is declared irrelevant, that God isn't real or you cannot believe in God, what happens? This fundamental human need, this need for God, doesn't go away. You can't just say, God's not real, goes away. No, this need for a higher power, for a moral authority to give us direction, it's always there. And even if people ascribe God to be themselves, that they are their highest moral authority, we still look to something. We are all looking for an overarching higher authority in some way. And when this happens, when it happens that they say God is not real, is not relevant, you cannot believe in God, kick it out of the space, you can be 100% sure that the Heavenly Father you worship, that you worship personally, is going to be replaced, is going to be forcibly replaced by a new God. Now, what is that new God? It is government. People talk about how radical others can become because when they become like thought police. And that's exactly right, though. When we become a godless society, it becomes easier to have thought police. You cannot think and do as you please once you have a God government. This new God, you know, where you have to replace your old God with government. Once you have a God government, thought police is in full force. Government God is what you would call a tyrannical government. And as is easily observed throughout all ages of history, God government will control how you think and how you live in some degree or another. In recent decades, and even in the most recent century, we've witnessed some of the bloodiest and some of the most life-controlling, agency-robbing, tyrannical governments, namely socialism and communism. And unfortunately, many Americans are advocating for this form of God government. It's really terrifying. Let me make this very clear. There is no wiggle room in what you can believe and no choice in how you want to live when there is a God government. There are already so many righteous commandments submitted. But when I say righteous, I mean sarcastically. There are already so many quote-unquote righteous commandments that are submitted by this rising God government, this tyrannical government. And I just want to share with you a couple of them. I mean, really, I could have gone on and on, but I just want to say, for example, let's say the God government, its first precept is save the planet. Well, then its commandments are, thou shalt not drive cars, let cows fart, or do anything that releases much of anything in the air. Thou shalt not trim trees or re-landscape without express approval and payment to the proper authorities. By the way, that's if you don't live in California, then you probably don't know what I mean there. Thou shalt only believe in our monopoly of scientific thought and interpretation regarding the climate. Thou shalt not reproduce because population density is too high. Or the precept 2, which is like monopolize thought and destroy dissent. You have these commandments such as, thou shalt call anything hate speech to shut down the voice of another. Thou shalt vilify and attack others either physically, verbally, or destroy their reputation if they do not agree with your agenda. Especially anyone who wants to have free speech. Or, thou shalt popularize anything that tears down confidence in popular unity and in national identity. I could go on and on and on. God government, it controls every aspect of your life. it doesn't go away. So the second part of the cause of Christians happens to be religion. Religion, if we break it down, and I've broken this down before in other podcasts, if you break it down in a very secular way to understand what it is, religion is the system of beliefs by which you live your life. Here is where you internalize and act, generally in line with your highest moral authority with God. Religion meant a lot to the Nephites. They sought to be free to worship God as they desired. This happens many times, where that's just what they desire to do that. So they are willing to fight or to pack up and go somewhere else to escape in order to have that. And remember that I said a tyrannical government acts like God, acting as that supreme power and will even control thought? Well, look back in the book of Mosiah, where King Noah killed Abinadi for preaching the gospel against him. And then Alma the elder started preaching and baptizing outside the city in hiding. And then you know what happened? When King Noah discovered them there, he said they were trying to create some sort of uprising against him, and so he sent his army to destroy them. Tyrannical governments are always paranoid about the existence of any group that thinks differently. Everything not approved by a tyrannical government or ruler is a threat to their power. In the Book of Alma, Ammon and his brethren converted many Lamanites. And what was the response of the Lamanite government? Well, they decided to wipe them out. They would rather have them killed. It was so bad to those Lamanites. It was so bad that those Lamanite converts, it was so bad for them that they fled to the Nephites to live under their protection. Now, I know you might think that the Lamanites only started attacking those converts, those Ammonites, because they hated anything that was Nephite related, including their religion, which the Ammonites adopted. But history still shows us time and again that tyrannical government always has a hatred for anything other than itself and the religion it preaches, which is political religion. For the Lamanites, their religion was part of their government. They were taught to hate Nephites and anything Nephite-related. And then if you look at more modern examples for Hitler and Lenin and Stalin, and essentially every socialist and communist of the last century, they all disdained religion and felt it needed to be removed because something like Christianity only ever got in the way of allowing a citizen to become a fully fledged member, converted member of their party and political ideology, their political religion. And this is why today we are in a lot of danger. As we let our religious freedoms go, we lose our rights to speak and act as we desire. For decades, the attack on religion has been deliberate, unrelenting, and vast in its nuances. And as Judeo-Christian beliefs have been eroded and displaced, they are now replaced by the latest religion on the rise, a type of religion that is the most dangerous type, the type I've been mentioning. I'm speaking of political religion. Political religion is so dangerous because it will use the power of government to stamp out the freedoms that allow for the liberal coexistence of any other type of religion. And it's very easy to see that progressivism or communism is the latest political religion, and it now pervades every facet of our lives. The one sure proof way that you can tell if political religion is taking over is by measuring to what extent things are politicized. Well, today, everything is politicized. There is a tireless, intruding belief system that works to shape and control everything we do, from how to raise your kids, to gender, to patriotism, to law and order, and to race, and the list goes on. As we read these chapters in the Book of Mormon, we need to take Captain Moroni's repeated advocacy for defending their religion very seriously. Our freedom of religion which is merely the right to free will and agency, is just as threatened in our day as it was in his day. The title of liberty was in part a response to a direct threat to the religious liberty of the Nephites. In Alma 46, Amalickiah and his followers, they hated the gospel and were determined to slay Helaman and his brethren because of it. It says that in the beginning of that chapter. Amalickiah wanted to be king, and in fine, the scriptures say that he did seek to destroy the church of God and to destroy the foundation of liberty. When Moroni saw what was happening, he created the title of liberty, and he rallied the people together to defend their religion, their God, peace, family, and freedom. And by the way, another wicked man named Amlici tried doing the exact same thing as Amalickiah in Alma chapter 2. In fact, it even says that it was his intent in that chapter to destroy the church of God. Kind of seeing a trend here, right? And as fascinating as that is, it's not surprising given how every tyrant seems to recognize that a religion, such as Christianity, tends to steer people away from the clutches and vices of political religion, which, you know, if you accept political religion, it allows tyrants to ultimately seize control. So just as Moroni had to defend religion, we too must do so, or else we are going to lose our current form of government, our government that allows us to live so wonderfully. There are just so many incontrovertible ties between religion, morality, and civil laws that sustaining religion is paramount to liberty. And really, I wish I had more time to go over it here, but I have discussed this in greater detail in other episodes, and if you want, I really encourage you to check them out. The third element from the cause of Christians is land. Now, it might sound funny, but yes, Captain Moroni mentions land several times as he is defending his nation. And although land isn't written in the title of liberty itself, it's still important enough that it comes up, though several times, as I mentioned, throughout these war chapters, and it's worth taking a deeper look into. As the scriptures indicate in Psalm 115:16, the heavens are the Lord's, and the earth he hath given to the children of men. And even if you look into Genesis, God gave the earth to Adam and Eve and their children to subdue it, to have dominion over the land. And let's clear this up. When Captain Moroni and the scriptures say land, we should really think property, one's own property. The right to one's own property is vital to the growth, happiness, prosperity, and industriousness of the individual. In fact, the philosopher Frederick Bastiat once asked this rhetorical question. He said, "What is property but an extension of our faculties?" Truly, your property is an extension of yourself. If what you have cannot be your own, then there is no incentive to do more with it, to beautify, to multiply, and to prosper. This is one major reason why socialism leads to indigence. It robs the aspiring individual of their incentive to be productive and to be prosperous, because the lazy individual will always have claim to their labor. There is actually a really great story that exemplifies this, but you'll have to remind me of it later because I really couldn't make it fit into this episode. It was getting quite long. But moving on, not to divert ourselves to other things. Truly, the Nephite society believed in property rights because they were able to work and keep that which they had. And so, really, it makes sense to think that their lands or their property was also a cause to fight for, and also an inspiring thought to people, to the Nephites when they were discouraged, because it was everything that they had worked for. It was their property that they had by which to sell and to trade with, to provide for their families with. It was the whole of their life's labors, and it was at stake in this fight. It's also important to keep in mind that throughout the book, throughout the entire Book of Mormon, generally speaking, the Nephites were more prosperous and industrious than the Lamanite people were, because as the Book of Mosiah states, the Lamanites were lazy and idolatrous. Therefore, they were desirous to bring the Nephites into bondage, that they might glut themselves with the labors of our hands, of the Nephite hands. Even Mormon records in Alma 17 that the Lamanites, quote, delighted in robbing and plundering the Nephites, that they might not labor for their property with their own hands. Thus, they were a very indolent people, end quote. I can easily imagine how the Nephites, understanding this about their enemy, and how they could basically get turned into slaves by their enemy, were very motivated to fight so hard so that way they could avoid being used in that way. And now we have our own fight regarding property. The rise of renewed interest and excitement for socialism is a major threat to the happiness, the prosperity of our nation, and the nation of any other matter, of any other part of the world for that matter. Despite how appealing socialism is made to sound, it is the very opposite of a Zion society. And it's really upsetting to me when people make that that mistake that in thinking that socialism is like trying to create Zion. No, it's not. Zion is based on respecting the individual's agency, allowing people to freely give to one another. And they give to one another because it's out of the desires of their hearts. That is completely different from socialism, where the government forces you to give up your property, your money most especially, in the name of quote-unquote utopia. As mentioned before, socialism encourages idleness and laziness and robs you of your reason to work harder. Why work so hard when the reward of your labor will be taken from you and given to everyone else? Fourth element is family. If the increase in single-parented, fatherless homes and abortion rates don't give you an idea about how the family has been attacked and negatively impacted, then I don't know what's going to clue you in. The nuclear family has always been the ideal and has been God-sanctioned from the beginning when he married Adam and Eve together. Clearly, there was a bond and a set of responsibilities to each other that God wanted to set forth as an example to all mankind. But today we see that to progressives and to communists, family ranks far below tribe. They want us to live by a tribe of race, a tribe of supposed cultures, tribe of sexual orientation or economic class or gender identity dysphoria. It has been taken even a step further. They want to create an enmity between those tribes that they convince us to believe in, to ascribe ourselves to. This enmity is most readily seen when groups such as Black Lives Matter declare something such as they want to disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family. Or how another organization states that the nuclear family is specific to white culture. And, of course, political religion of today, white culture is really the dirty diaper of all cultures, and you don't want to be like white culture. Though the Nephites in Captain Moroni's day were fighting for their families to literally save them from physical harm or servitude, the threat now is no less serious. We aren't involved in a fight that is physical, but we battle in a war of contest of words and opinions, of truth and deception, of light versus darkness. And ultimately, your family's well-being is on the line. And we must defend it. And we know, and we believe, and we know that the family is the fundamental unit of society, as is stated in the Proclamation on the Family. Which means that when the family breaks down, so does all of society. And I would even add in here, interject, that crime rates is one easily spotted statistic that is correlated with the family breakdown, if that's any indication. The next one is peace. I think this is a brief but invaluable point. So peace, by advocating peace, you maintain that you are taking action not out of spite or hatred, but out of duty and obligation. I recall in my mind once that I was just blown away when I heard Jordan Peterson once mention in one of his videos, I wish I could even recall which one it was, but in one of his videos, he describes how he always wanted to understand what meek meant as that word that is used in the New Testament. Like, what does it mean? What does meek mean? So he did lots of digging and research to try to find kind of where it began. What was the original meaning? And ultimately, it came down to mean something like this. He said it meant something along the lines of those who have swords and know how to use them, but keep them sheathed. Defending peace, making peace a part of your cause, therefore, seems to be like a form of meekness. And in a sense, it is in line with what Ronald Reagan referred to as peace through strength, which was really a concept by George Washington, by the way. If we are to have peace, we must be willing to live in a manner that is void of contention, but with strength enough to deter an enemy. The last part is liberty. Liberty is to live within society free from tyranny or harm from our neighbor. It is best found when government will protect you from your neighbor, but will also let you live as you please. Captain Moroni knew that if Amalickiah had his way, if he could be king over the Nephites, their liberty would be completely destroyed. And so when Amalickiah was seeking to change the government so that he could be king, Captain Moroni made the title of liberty. It's very telling, though, that the Cause of Christians mentions liberty, but the title of liberty doesn't stay in its declaration the word liberty. However, the title itself says liberty. So what does that tell us? Well, it indicates that liberty is the civil safeguard of all the other elements, of all the other parts of the cause of Christians. That without a good government that offers liberty, you cannot properly enjoy and maintain those other elements. Anyone who has lived under a tyrannical rule can attest to that fact. One of the greatest threats to liberty today is progressive ideology. It is in convincing us to believe that we should lawfully mandate disparate and unequal treatments of individuals based on their race or their politics, their political stances, or their religious views. That is a very common cause that is forwarded by progressivism. That people should be treated unequally if they believe differently from you, if you disagree with them. And that the government should treat you differently, should treat you second class like, because you're so disagreeable. We truly live in a day that is precarious, and we should walk away with this message as we read these chapters. That is, we as Christians are obligated to take up the cause of Christians, as described in the Book of Mormon. We must come running together, as the people did when they saw the title of liberty, and commit to ourselves, to God, to each other, that we will defend God, religion, family, peace, property, and liberty. Thank you for listening to the Alex Spicer Show. I hope you enjoyed this segment. This is part of segment two, or episode two of the special episodes known as Especially for Members, EFM. If you have any questions or comments, I'd love to see them in the comments section. Or you can send me an email at contact@alexspicer.com. And as I always encourage, please share this with anyone you feel like needs to hear this or could learn something from it. And especially, I hope that you can apply some of the things that you heard today. Thank you so much for listening.